Good morning. My name is Linus Coyelis. I'm Acting Director of the White House Office of Public Liaison, and it's a great pleasure for me to welcome you all this morning to the White House complex for this special briefing on the President's request for U.S. aid to the democratic resistance in Nicaragua. We realize that we contacted many of you at the last minute, and we are very thankful for this overwhelming response. I hope that the sunny and warm day had something to do with it also. And for those listening in room 474, I would like to express our apologies for there not being enough room in this room, but as you've no doubt been assured already, the President will be visiting you in room 474 as well. I would like to just run through some of the groups that were so instrumental over this weekend in making sure that this event is a success. So I would like to thank the U.S. Defense Committee, the Renaissance Women, the American Conservative Trust, Federation of Hungarian Americans, Joint Baltic American Congress, Polish American Congress, the Concerned Women of America, Eagle Forum, Freedom Federation, Bulgarian National Front, Federation of Asian American Republicans and Citizens for Reagan, and Jeff Bodkin. As you see, we have a very wide, very broad coalition, and quite honestly, that's what it's going to take to win this fight. The President cannot do it alone. He needs support from people like you. Next thing I'd like to do is just point out your briefing packets. I hope that some of you have had a chance to study it a little bit. First of all, let me just announce that the program has changed a little bit. Elliot Abrams, unfortunately, has been a little tied up, so he will not be able to join us this morning. But Donald Regan, the Chief of Staff, will be filling in for him to give you some pointers as to or some inside scoop as to some of the thinking here at the White House on as we fight for aid for Central America. I would also like to point out that we do have a questionnaire at the back of the packet. It's very helpful for us to know which of you who would like further information, either through the mail or at briefings like this, on our defense and foreign policy initiatives. Next, I would like to make an announcement. Next Monday, there is a rally in support of U.S. aid to the democratic resistance. It starts at 12:15 on the east side of the Capitol. That's Monday, March 17th. And there's a broad coalition, I understand, who is putting this rally together. The contact number is 699-9300. 699-9300. Next Monday, the 17th at 12:15. We're not allowed to ask you to lobby from this podium here, but a rally is an innocent enough event, I think. It's at St. Patrick's Day. I don't know if they'll be serving green beer. Speaking of green beer, it is now my great pleasure to introduce the man. the man... The man that, I guess, according to the Post this morning, George McGovern, does not want talking to you on this issue, but we think he's got some important things to say. So it's my great pleasure to introduce the Director of Communications at the White House, Assistant to the President, Pat Buchanan.
You know, thank you very much. Save that for Mr. Regan. You know, 10 days ago they said there just was no interest in this issue of Contra aid up on Capitol Hill. We seem to have gotten their attention last week. I'm going to be, as Linus mentioned, Elliot Abrams, who was going to brief today, will not be here. Don Regan will be coming in around 11:15. We expect the President around 11:30. And consistent with our policy of fairness and balance, the President will be followed by 8 minutes of rebuttal by Vladimir Posner. Seriously, we are really on the eve of a great decision. Even the liberal New Republic, where my friend Kondracki used to work and Charles Krauthammer now does, perceives this vote on Contra aid to be among the most decisive of our decade. And the issue, I think, to us is simple, and it is clear. Will the Congress of the United States provide the embattled democratic resistance with the weapons it needs to recapture its betrayed revolution and bring freedom to Nicaragua? Or will Congress disarm the resistance and abandon them to their enemies the way the Hungarian freedom fighters were abandoned 3 decades ago? Now then, in 1956, we could exonerate ourselves for the shame we all felt by saying, well, after all, Hungary is on Moscow's doorstep, and to send weapons to save Budapest is to risk war. Now that Russian tanks are killing Nicaraguan boys on the doorstep of the United States, what is our excuse now? Now, once again, the left is whining that such a formulation is too simplistic, it's too stark, that to frame this as a choice between freedom fighters and Sandinistas is unfair. It is oh so much more complex than that, we are told. Yet at that conclave of international terrorists and communists in Havana 4 weeks ago, they did not say the main enemy was the Contras or the main enemy was Costa Rica. They said the main enemy was the imperialists, us, the United States. Now that is fairly simple and direct. And when the arch-terrorist Gaddafi was asked why he was sending money and weapons into Nicaragua, he answered bluntly, because Nicaragua brings the revolution home to the borders of the United States. Yet again, we see the old arguments and the old evasions and the old formulations being trotted out again and again. You can recall them well. Stalin was good old Uncle Joe, a prisoner of the Politburo with whom we could do business. Mao's murderous henchmen were agrarian reformers. Between 30 and 60 million Chinese paid with their lives for that colossal blunder. Uncle Ho, the last time I was in the White House, was talked of as a nationalist, the George Washington of his country. When we said that if you abandoned Saigon and Phnom Penh, that would bring a communist bloodbath, they laughed at us, they ridiculed the idea. Well, there was a bloodbath in South Vietnam, there was a Holocaust in Cambodia, and today Soviet bombers are flying out of Da Nang, and Soviet warships are berthed at Cameron Bay. Well, not this time. This time they will be held accountable. If they scuttle the president's policy, if they let communism consolidate in Nicaragua and roll over Central America, if the 9- and 10-year-old American boys of today, a decade hence, are doing patrol along the Rio Grande River, they will not escape the judgment seat of history this time. Never again, Ronald Reagan said as a candidate, will we permit American boys to be sent abroad to fight and die in a war they were not permitted to win. It is no less immoral to send 19-year-old Nicaraguan boys to fight and die for freedom in the jungles and mountains of Nicaragua and not give them the weapons to fight and win. I'll be delighted to take questions for the period we've got here until Mr. Reagan comes through that door, and I assume the president right after him. I'm sure you've got a number of them based on what you've been hearing and reading over the weekend, et cetera. Yes. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Would you give us your assessment of the vote in today's reading?
I think what happened with the events of the last week has created a great deal of ferment on the Hill, and we were probably down in a hard count, something like 30 votes in the House as of a week ago. I don't know that there's been any real change. I do know we have some people who were not with us the last time who are already with us and coming our way, a few. We're doing better than we were last week. I don't know how the events of last week are going to translate in terms of exact numbers of votes, though, right now. We've still got 10 days to go, and that's a very long time when you've got a political instrument as powerful as Ronald Reagan who intends to do a national television speech. Yes, sir.
In the president's message, there is reference to the hope that, or there is an expression of hope that there might be some negotiation and a peaceful settlement before the term of this program expires. Is it realistic to hope, or can they win in this year and a half without support?
My understanding of the military situation that if we get the weapons, and the type of weapon and some trainings and communication equipment and the rest that's required, we could very soon, or the Contras could very soon, field 25,000 men. And if you go to the old ratio of 10 to 1 in a guerrilla war, that would make the Sandinistas, I think it would reverse the tide that exists right now. As to whether it is realistic to think that communists will negotiate themselves out of power, clearly there is no historic precedent for that having been done. But we do know that without the military pressure on Nicaragua and on Managua, there is no chance of anything being accomplished, and what you're going to get eventually is a consolidation of that communist regime. Whether that's realistic or whether individuals are hopeful it can work depends on who you speak to in the administration. Yes, sir.
Why does it take so long to come out this Contra aid? Not many. 3 years, 4 years ago to come out this money to assist.
Why has it taken so long to come and argue for military assistance for the Contras? Well, we did when I first came in here last year. There was initial recommendation and a program of going in for military assistance, and it was rejected in both houses, as I recall. Then we lost the vote for humanitarian assistance by 2 votes. Then Ortega took his famous trip to Moscow, and a number of Democrats, having blown a hole in the policy and replaced it with nothing, turned around and voted for humanitarian assistance. I think the question here in Central America, we're going to win the political battle. The question is whether we're going to win the political battle before the resistance loses the war. If you go back to 1980, the United States was giving foreign aid to Nicaragua. That foreign aid was supported by moderates and even some conservatives. Then began the covert war, if you will. Then Congress said no to military assistance. Then they said yes to humanitarian assistance. Now they're considering military assistance. Now more and more votes, and we are beginning, I think, to win the argument. The American people are becoming more and more aware of the danger, and I am convinced that if this problem is not resolved today, 5 years from now, you can forget about the deficit and those concerns. Nicaragua and Central America will be the number one issue for the American people, and those people up on the Hill are beginning to understand that. Yes, sir.
One of the successes of communism is propaganda and misinformation. Last night I was watching a TV program in favor of the Sandinistas and in favor of the rebels in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. Does the government...
Is this public broadcasting?
We have a very intensive program.
Is this public broadcasting?
Yeah.
We tried something on that about 10 years ago.
Channel 7.
Channel 7 at 11:30.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, there.
Well,
as the president said, there has been a drumbeat of propaganda about the nature of that conflict down there. That is the problem. And, of course, it's been a problem ever since the Vietnam era when there's a breakup of the American consensus on who the enemy is, not only how to deal with him. And you're seeing that manifest, and there's an awful lot of church groups and others who feel that the Nicaraguan regime is promising, whereas the El Salvador government is fascist. And, that's the world we inherited and the world we live in. The 1950s are long gone. Yes, ma'am. Well, what they say, one of their arguments this year is that the Contras aren't winning. And when you strip them of arms and weapons and the rest of it and put them up against a Sandinista force that got $750 million in gunships and tanks last year, it's sort of self-fulfilling. There's no doubt that the Contras, if they're not given weaponry, can't stand up to an army and militia, which is at 120,000 and expanding, which has got 3,500 Cuban military advisors, which has helicopter gunships, and which has long-range mortars and the rest. And that's the real question is whether they're going to get the military equipment or not. And to me, this is the crucial, decisive question, and on that, I don't think there ought to be any compromise. Yes, sir.
Following a two-track approach on one side with Contadora, on the other side helping the Contras, and if that is true, which one would be more important for you?
Oh, I think without the Contras, we have nothing, my view. We're dealing with revolutionary communists. Only two regimes I can think of have been removed from power once they've been installed, Bela Kunz in Hungary and the gentleman in Grenada, who were removed in 1983. The latter by outside force. So unless you have military pressure on revolutionary communists, I think you really have nothing. So it seems to me the indispensable element in the equation is the Nicaraguan democratic resistance, the Nicaraguans who are willing to fight for what they believe in, that gives you any leverage that you have diplomatically. Yes, sir, up there.
The old adage of a couple of pictures are worth a thousand words. Will we be able to show the American people over the coming few days the pictures of the gunships, the Russian tanks, and perhaps even the way these people are getting their weapons into Nicaragua rather than have to read it on the news?
We are working on that, and on exactly that. Yes, sir.
The Sandinistas, when they came into power, gave one image, and it seemed to be different after they got in. The president recently talked with those heading up the guerrilla forces of the Contras. Do you personally know those men? Do you have confidence in their character, that they're men that when aid comes in, I hope and trust we will win the battle there? What, I guess I'd be interested in your personal assessment of the future.
I don't know. I guess Arturo Cruz, I believe, was a democratic socialist of sorts. I've talked to Calero many times on my radio and television program before I came in here. Ravelo, I didn't know. But these men are patriots. I mean, these men don't, at that point in your life, go off and support a guerrilla effort unless you, I mean, you're not in the business to make money if you're doing something like that. And as for the resistance itself, it consists of 19-year-old kids and 20-year-old kids who are up in the hills fighting the most powerful regime that Central America has seen. And, the allegation that they're Somocistas or something is preposterous since they were 13 years old when Somoza was dumped. So, yes, I do have confidence in them, unquestionably. They need a lot of American support and training. Look, the question we're going to answer here is whether in Central America, on our own doorstep, the Soviet Union and Cuba are better allies of communism than we are of freedom. Yes?
Can we apply Grenada invasion in Nicaragua today?
Can we apply the Grenada invasion in Nicaragua today?
Why not do that?
Hold on. our answer is that there is no, if give the Nicaraguans the weaponry and the material and they can regain their own freedom, there is no need for American troops now, there is no request for American troops, and there is no desire for American troops, and there is no plan for American troops. Yes, ma'am.
On this issue, or is it becoming a Republican Democratic?
No, we will have Democratic support, and you will have to have Democratic support to win, and probably some in the Senate, and certainly some in the House. But I think the old consensus that existed about where the great enemy of the West and of freedom was the Soviet Union and its extensions and empire. There is simply no consensus on that basic fundamental premise up there on Capitol Hill. There, for some people up there, if we can get rid of apartheid in South Africa, all will be well down there. If we get rid of Marcos, it's done. And who see the enemy more as Pinochet than Castro. So I don't think you're going to achieve that type of consensus. What we want to achieve is a working coalition and to get the support we need. And in so many cases, look, action and decisiveness and victory themselves produce a consent. There was no consensus around Grenada before it was begun. And during the operation, the president was vilified and castigated by the media and members of the Congress. And when it was over and when it was a success and when the people of Grenada, as they did when we were down there 3 weeks ago, just cheered the president for sending in the helicopter gunships, then the consensus formed that maybe this was a good thing. So consensus sometimes can follow action. Yes, sir.
I represent here the Coordinating Committee of Hungarian Organizations in North America. First of all, I thank you very much, remembering that the Hungarian freedom fight has been abandoned by the West and by the United States. At that time, I have had a 2 hours discussion with former President Hoover, who tried to get some action. Mm-hmm. Today, the Nicaraguan question is handled as a regional question. It is not regional. Mm-hmm. It is a worldwide question. And please emphasize that. Thank you.
It's a regional riot, a regional expression of a global conflict. Yes, sir.
This time is of the essence. If we lose the vote on the 17th, what will be the administration's next step?
I don't think that has been determined. And this gets into political strategy, too. If you indicated that when you lose, or if you lose the vote on the 19th, that we will immediately offer some substitute, the opposition, I think, would have an incentive to say, well, let's just defeat the president and support a substitute that comes around. I think what we need here is to tell the Congress, look, give us what we believe we need to make our policy of bringing democracy to Nicaragua succeed, or don't give it to us, and you take full responsibility. Just let it sit right there, and if they blow a hole in the policy, if I were asked to recommend to the president, I would tell him, just go out to California for your Easter vacation, sir, and think over what we're going to do next, and let them sit there with responsibility for what they've done. Yes, sir.
I thought I would mention one thing in response to the lady's question concerning how do you rebut this charge that the freedom fighters are disorganized, ineffective, or lazy. One thing you can point to is, if any of these things were true, why is it that the Sandinista regime has had to undertake the forcible relocation of almost 10% of the Nicaraguan population? Most recently, in 85, they forcibly relocated 180,000 peasants, destroying their homes and their farms as they moved them southward. This is strong evidence of the fact that the peasants, the campesinos, are supporting the freedom fighters and that they are having good effect.
Okay. One more question, then we'll go. Yes, sir.
It is of the utmost importance, I think, that the result of the Bay of Pigs be remembered. The little drop on the hot stone instead of a couple of buckets to extinguish a fire. Mm-hmm. And let's hope we're not doing the same thing in Nicaragua as has been done in the past by the United States in so many Latin American countries.
Mm-hmm. That's the president's point when he says, don't just give them enough to fight and die, but give them enough to fight and win. Let me introduce now the Chief of Staff to the President, Don Regan.
Do you ever feel like the meat in between two slices of bread and going to get gnawed on? Imagine being a speaker in between Pat Buchanan and Ronald Reagan. Pat must have given you all of the facts and figures, and Ronald Reagan, of course, will give you his slant. What am I doing here? I'll tell you exactly what I'm doing here, to emphasize the importance that we in the administration put on winning this issue, not for ourselves. This is not so that we can add another notch to our belt that Ronald Reagan won a legislative victory in the Congress, but for the people of Nicaragua and for people who want freedom everywhere, we have to win this one. And that's why we're going all out. Since I have under my charge the legislative affairs of the White House, let me tell you what the legislative situation is currently and what we hope it will be by March 19th. As you know, there were several committees of the House that had to deal with this issue. Several of them had voice votes. Several had recorded votes. In a recorded vote on the Intelligence Committee, one Democrat, Dan Flood, came over and joined a solid phalanx of Republicans, but nevertheless, we lost that vote 9-7, in other words, to report the bill out unfavorably. In the Foreign Affairs Committee, the chairman, Danny Fussell, joined with two Democrats, by the way, all three of them were from Florida, and they went with most Republicans. Two Republicans deserted, went over and voted against this, Olympia Snow, and who was the other one, Pat? The other name escapes me at the moment. I'll think of it, though. But anyway, they went over and joined the other side, and the vote came out. Again, it was something in the order of 21-18. Now, then there were two votes, one affirmative from the House Armed Forces Committee and one negative again, from the Appropriations Committee. Both, however, curious from my point of view that they were by voice vote. It looked to me like many of the members wanted to mask what they were going to do. The reason I bring this out is to illustrate to you that the situation is very fluid. This hasn't been lost. This hasn't been won as yet. And we have about 10 days to accomplish this. March 19th is the day on which the vote will be recorded in the House. If we win on that date, then, of course, we go on to the Senate for another battle. And even if we lose in the House, we will go on to the Senate for another battle. But it's better to win in the House rather than to have the thing up in the air. Can we win in the House? I think so. Each day this week, we have another event scheduled to try to bring to the attention of the American people and to the Congress the seriousness with which you and I view this situation, and to try to bring it to them, to tee it up for what it really is. Where do you stand on having another communist nation in the Western Hemisphere? We are not, in spite of my sidekick here, Pat Buchanan, necessarily making this a Democrat versus Republican argument. We think it transcends national politics, that this is something that both sides of the aisle should be able to join hands in, because it's things that affect the fundamentals that we Americans believe in. And when it comes down to that, there should be no discussion as to whether one is patriotic or not. The question here is, does one believe in freedom for all peoples, or does one not believe in freedom for all peoples? The President will be on television on Sunday night next at 8 o'clock in a direct appeal to the American public. Last year, it was said that we lost the vote and we only got so-called humanitarian aid, although I often wonder as a combat officer, former combat officer, whether it is humanitarian to send somebody into the field with an old M16 rifle to defend yourself against a gunship or against a tank. I don't think that's humanitarian at all. I think you fight fire with fire. But nevertheless, last year we got so-called humanitarian aid. And the net result was that the Sandinista government did not return to the table for any kind of discussion. This year, we are going to appeal to the American people to force them to the table. And the only way you can force them to the table is if you apply force against them. And applying force against them means military aid. It does not mean more medicine or more uniforms or a better pair of boots. It means fighting an armed aggressor with aggressive weapons. And that's exactly what we intend to do. But notice what we've done on the other side. We've taken that one extra step. We've appointed our top negotiator, Ambassador Phil Habib, brought him back from where he was operating in the Philippines, and are now sending him into Central America to further this peace process and to try to get them to the table and to see that at the table negotiations go on in an equitable manner. Now, we would not have been doing that if our sole idea is to get into a war with the Sandinista government. That is not what we are trying to do. What we're trying to do is to bring them back to the table and make them negotiate so that they will have free and open elections there. But isn't it ironic, really ironic, when you look at the press treatment of what happened in the Philippines, where, again, we sent Phil Habib there to make sure that there was some type of open process leading to elections. And then, after the elections were declared fraudulent, to see that the one that got defrauded actually became the head of government. Contrast that with what is happening with the same press in their treatment of Nicaragua. They will not allow the same thing to happen on the left, which happened on the right. That, I think, is what the American people, once they realize the juxtaposition of these two things, the irony of it, will insist on even-handed treatment by this government of other governments. If we can do that in the Philippines, why can't we do it and why shouldn't we do it in Nicaragua? We should. That's the theme that the president will strike on his in his TV address to the American public. Now, we know from our surveys that one of the things that is most distressing to the American public, it's uneasy, it's quiet, they don't express it too much in the open, but we know it's a feeling that they have. Will this be another Vietnam? Are we going down the slippery slope? Again, we have not yet made our case to the American public that that is not what you want, it's not what I want. It is that what the United opposition is saying to us is that what we want are supplies. We don't have the money to buy our supplies. We have no source of supplies other than the United States. Give us the supplies. We don't want your troops. We don't want your sons. We don't want your boys coming down here and fighting for us. We can take care of ourselves. That's the message we have to get to the American people, that this is entirely different than Vietnam, and that we are not on that slippery slope of engaging our own troops in Central America. If we can reassure them to that, you'll see an awful lot of the tide coming our way, because that's the main worry that the great American public has, that are not too up on this issue. They just hear about it, and that same fear that is now in the American conscience, I guess you would say, for the past 15 years is still at work. And that's the thing, again, that we're going to have to overcome in order to get enough people to do what we want. What is it we want? What do we want you to do? You have got to influence the Congress of the United States, in particular the House of Representatives, between now and March 19th. If you don't, we will not win. If you do, we not only can, but will win. Now, we are working our side of it. We're working the diplomatic side. We're working the legislative side. We're doing as much as we can. But nothing influences a congressman as much as telephone calls, telegrams, letters from individuals telling him how to vote or telling her how to vote on these issues. I know that from my own experience. I'm not a politician. I think you know that. But I have found in the 5 years that I've been here in Washington that nothing influences the congressman, not the White House, not Ronald Reagan, as good a communicator as he is, as much as the weighing. How many did we get for? How many did we get against? Therefore, I'm for. And that's what you have to develop. And the time is short because, unfortunately, the post office doesn't work as fast as we would like it to work. Telegrams, I still don't understand the telegram system in the United States as to whether how they ever do get delivered. But phone calls, things of that nature, are necessary. And that's what we want you to do. So it's in your hands as well as in our hands that we join together. Thank you. I understand that we now have to have a 5-minute break to let the press in. There'll be a little bit of noise. They said I couldn't take questions because of the noise, so be patient. Let's have the press in.
We only have a very short time, so please don't leave the room, but just relax for a couple minutes.
Thank you.
In my opening remarks, I failed to name, I know, two groups. We have a Hispanic Republican group that also helped with this morning's session, and I believe several Cuban American groups. So I'd like to thank them also for helping out. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, please. Thank you very much. Why do I wish you were all in the Congress? Well, the matter that brings us here today is, of course, a very grave one. I know how hard many of you have worked on this issue and how strongly you agree with me about its importance. Matter of fact, here I am preaching to the choir. But looking around this room today, I can't help but remember that story about the fellow who in later life was the only living survivor of the Johnstown flood. And he was frequently asked to speak, and finally he got to being out on a lecture tour and was practically making his living just telling his memories of that great disaster. And then came the day when he met his heavenly reward, and he went up there, but pretty soon he kind of began pestering St. Peter about maybe setting up a date or two up there so that he could tell about the Johnstown flood. Well, St. Peter said that the people up there did like to hear from recent arrivals about how things were down here, so he set it up for him. He gave him, got all the saints and prophets and seraphim and cherubim together to hear the Johnstown flood story. And then he, St. Peter, introduced this veteran of the flood. And as the veteran stepped up to the podium, St. Peter whispered in his ear, "That fellow in the first row, second from the aisle, is named Noah." Well, I was looking around. Looking around this room today, I see a lot of Noahs. And when I'm talking about the communist menace in Central America, so I don't think any of you need a long lecture on the realities at hand. This is an uphill battle in which we're engaged, but we're making progress. You can sense that the tide is turning in favor of the Democratic resistance. Far-sighted Democrats and Republicans are coming together in a realization of the common danger. And this is not some narrow partisan issue. It's a national security issue of paramount importance. Whether the Soviet Union will be permitted to establish a subversive base camp and military beachhead on the mainland of North America. On this issue, we must act not as Republicans, but as or not as Democrats, but as Americans. As Scoop Jackson, who led the charge on Capitol Hill to save Central America, reminded us, in matters of national security, the best politics is no politics. So I think it's very important to put this current struggle in clear perspective, to realize that there is an exciting, hopeful dimension to it all. The events of the last 3 or 4 years have seen the slow reconstruction of that anti-communist coalition, that bipartisan consensus on foreign policy that once existed on Capitol Hill. I don't have to tell any of you about far-left ideology and the power that it once wielded here, an ideology that automatically identified anyone wearing fatigues, carrying a rifle, and spouting Marxist slogans as a liberator of his nation, an ideology that permitted many liberals to practice selective indignation, to hold to a double standard for certain dictators, to judge these dictators, no matter how repressive or cruel, less harshly because they called themselves socialists, Marxists, or communists. But as I say, I think all this is fading now, and realism is returning. We've managed to work with the Congress to maintain a steady increase in the defense budget, to rebuild our strategic forces, to achieve a bipartisan consensus on the Kissinger Commission. We managed to get aid to places like El Salvador and other nations in Central America, and last year to not only get the approval of humanitarian aid to the freedom fighters, but accomplish the near spontaneous repeal of the Clark Amendment. You remember that that was the thing that prevented us from giving some support when we could have prevented there being a communist government in Angola. Only a few years ago, to hope for all of this would have seemed to be asking for far too much. Yet all of this has happened, and I think it'll continue to happen. What we're seeing is the end of the post-Vietnam syndrome, the return of realism about the communist danger. And now we're ready for one of the final acts. The importance of this moment cannot be underestimated. Think what signal we'll be sending to the rest of the world when and if this aid to the freedom fighters in Nicaragua is passed. Wouldn't it be wonderful to someday see in Nicaragua the restoration of the democratic dream, to see in downtown Managua celebrations similar to those that we've seen recently in Queens Park, Manila, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And I think it's there for the asking, and so too is the moral obligation. At a critical early stage, the United States gave hope and help to the freedom fighters in Nicaragua. We have a moral obligation now, after a couple of year gap, to continue that support. I don't think there's anyone in this room who can forget the freedom fighters of 30 years ago. Who among us doesn't remember November 1956 and that last radio message from Budapest? Civilized people of the world, in the name of liberty and solidarity, we are asking you to help. Our ship is sinking. The light vanishes. The shadows grow darker from hour to hour. Listen to our cry. Start moving. Extend to us brotherly hands. People of the world, save us. SOS. Help. 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 God be with you and with us. That tragic plea could not be answered. That was when the tanks rolled down the streets, the Soviet tanks in Hungary, and crushed that revolution. Now we have the chance to answer a similar plea. So I asked you to come here today for a simple reason. I know how much many of you are doing. I know how hard you're fighting. I'm grateful, but not so grateful that I won't ask you to do even more, to redouble your efforts and to step up the fight. In my first inaugural, I mentioned some words that Dr. Joseph Warren, not long before he was killed at Bunker Hill, said to his fellow Americans. They remind us of the importance of the fight for freedom, our own and that of others, and I would leave you with them now. He said, "Our country is in danger, but not to be despaired of. On you depend the fortunes of America. You are to decide the important questions upon which rests the happiness and the liberty of millions yet unborn. Act worthy of yourselves." Well, I know you have been acting worthy of yourselves, and I know you'll continue. But there are still some here in the capital city who need to hear from you and to hear how important it is to let those people we're calling the freedom fighters. I know they're technically called the Contras. Well, I like freedom fighters better because that's what they really are. And they don't ask for that all-out sacrifice from us. To the contrary, they don't want our troops. They just want the means and the tools they need to get the job done. And for those people who would like to call them some kind of terrorists, let me just tell you one thing. One of our own people down there, some time ago, not too long ago, speaking to them, asked them why they weren't doing what the communist guerrillas in El Salvador were doing. Why didn't they hit targets like power plants and so forth to cause more distress to the Sandinista government? And those Contras, those freedom fighters said, no, that would hurt the people of Nicaragua, and we don't want to hurt the people, our people in Nicaragua. I think they've earned our respect and our support. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. Please do not forget to return the forms outside on the table as you leave. Thank you.